It's time for This Week in WordPress, episode number 334, entitled The Mother of All Futons. It was recorded on Monday, the 19th of May, 2025. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and today I'm joined by Remcus de Vries, by Tim Nash, and by Corey Mass. What do we talk about? Well, we spend a huge amount of the episode talking about speed optimization, because Remcus has got an article about that, and the conversation really does get derailed. We also spend a lot of time towards the end talking about AI and the different ways that we, as WordPress users, are using that. But we also talk about the fact that the WordPress Media Core has come to an end, the fact that hosting.com is the new name for A2, plus many more other hosting companies, WordPress events happening. Well, WordCamp Europe is about to happen. WordCamp US hopefully will happen. We talk about that. And there's another alternative event happening around WordCamp Europe, which you can attend as well, although I think the tickets may well have sold out. There's a new plugin in the WordPress space to help you organize your media library, particularly around videos. And there's a new cart plugin as well, which will bind on to your WooCommerce store and add a sidebar to hopefully upsell your bits and pieces. So that's what we've got for you this week. And it's all coming up next on This Week in WordPress. This episode of the WP Builds podcast is brought to you by GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And by Bluehost. Redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And by Omnisend. Do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make 73 bucks for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it may be in the part of the world where you are. It is the 334th episode of This Week in WordPress, which is quite a lot. And I just keep droning on about WordPress each and every week. And luckily, I don't do it alone. I'm joined by three other people so that we can all drone on about WordPress together. I'm very, very pleased to have them. Normally, I'm in the top corner, so all of this is going to go wrong. I've got my little fingers kind of figured out for where everybody is. Okay, let's go around the houses. So that was my... Okay, there's Remcus. Hello, Remcus. How are you doing?
Hello, Nathan. I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, good. Remcus is joining us from the Netherlands. I'm going to read his biography if I have one. Let me just scroll down. Here we go. Remcus de Vries is a WordPress performance specialist focused on speed, security, and scalability. As co-founder of That was not lost on me. As co-founder of Scanfully, he helps site owners stay ahead of performance and security issues. Remcus also runs Within WordPress, a newsletter and podcast for those passionate about building better WordPress sites, and shares his insights on YouTube. Drop us the URL, Remcus. What's the best place to find you?
remk.us.
Okay. Or scanfully.com, which is obviously written on the screen beneath him.
A.us is like a link in bio type thing.
Oh, okay. Oh, you have one of those. That's quite nice. Anyway, there's Remcus. Thanks for joining us, Remcus. Appreciate it. This, I'm going to go for Tim because that's easy. He's above my head. Hello, Tim. How are you doing?
Hello.
I'm going to refresh and hope that there's something there. I don't know if there will be. No, I don't have a biography, so I'm just going to hand it over to Tim. It says TBD. Tim, introduce yourself.
I'm trying to create something on the fly that can round with TBD. No, my name's Tim Nash. I'm a WordPress security consultant who normally comes and puts on city bios. I was pretty sure I did add a bio today, but apparently, like so many things in life, I forgot.
It's okay. It probably got overwritten. This is this Podcaster Plus app that we use is something that I kind of had built many, many years ago, and it still doesn't have any sort of Ajax-y stuff in it. So if one of the other two guests logged in and clicked save, it would have just overwritten anything that you put in there. So apologies for that if your bio was there. Anyway, there's Tim Nash, and I'm going to... Oh! Yep, there we go. Got it right. I can't quite get the angle right, though. There we go. Helpfully, everybody's joining. There he is, Corey Mass. Hello, Corey. Are you on mute?
Do my six-word intro.
Okay, Corey, here we go.
WordPress.
Here we go. Corey Mass, founder and creator of OMG, the WordPress plugin, WordPress freelance developer, WordPress product organizer. Is that that's
but
the
he
lot,
does
yeah?
Nothing with WordPress, ironically.
He does nothing with WordPress. You heard it here first. Bit of housekeeping. If you are joining us, and I can see there's quite a few people joining us, I appreciate that. Thank you. And you wish to make a comment, the very easiest place to do that is probably on the YouTube channel. And, you know, if you're on YouTube, you found it already. The other easiest place, I suppose, would be to go to wpbuilds.com/live. Remkus is currently sporting it under his chin. Yeah, there. Look, yeah, it's easy, isn't it?
No, it's not.
WP Builds. So it's so not easy, is it, to get the finger right? WPBuilds.com/live. If you go there, then you'll have the YouTube comments on the right-hand side if you're on a desktop. And also, you'll notice that in the actual video player, it says live chat at the top right-hand corner. You can click that and invoke a non-Google chat. You don't need to be logged into anything. You just type in your name and you're off to the races. And I can see that a few people have done that already, so I appreciate it. Who have we got? We've got Influence WP. So that'd be Ryan joining us. Hello from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina, US. Hello indeed. Thank you so much. Webalogic. Who's Webalogic?
Someone who wants to stay anonymous.
Okay, anonymous. Okay. Hello from sunny for a change UK. I bet it's somebody I do know. I just can't make the connection. I'm sorry about that, Webalogic. Friendly Web Guy. This is Dave. There is a bright object in the sky that's warm. Is that the sun? Also in the, yeah, it is hot today. It's actually hot in the UK. We've got actual sun. And what am I doing? I'm sitting in here droning on about WordPress. Anyway, Tammy Lister also joining us. Hi from the UK, where it's apparently summer. Tim Nash is joining us. Never heard of him. but he's commenting about the sun, so that was nice. Friendly web guy, Dave. Da, 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 da. Hello, friends. That's Courtney Robertson. Da, 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 da. Ross Wintle. Hello, Ross. Hello. A rare week off in Swindon. And so what are you doing with your time? You're joining us, and I really appreciate that. Cammy McNamara over on Washington State, I want to say. Good morning, raining in Seattle. There you go. Justin Ormerod. There you go. Thank you. That's who WebLogic is. And finally, Nomad Skateboarding in San Diego. So I usually don't do the weather report as it's almost always sunny. Anybody wants some? Always. And that's just not fair. I guess in Amsterdam, it's basically the same weather as we get here, Remkus. It's usually a bit gray and rubbish.
I have no clue. That's an hour and a half away from me.
Okay. Yeah, it's a long way. Okay, that's it. That's what we got for you in terms of the panel. Let's get stuck into the bits and pieces that we've got. Let me just find the... Why won't that caption go off? Where is it? There it is. It's hidden beneath the menu. Here we go.
The relief.
I know. Thank you. WPBuilds.com. This is our website. If you fancy sort of subscribing, I appreciate it when you do. I get a little email notification each time somebody does it. It's quite nice to wake up in the morning to a few of those. Stick your email address in here. And click subscribe, and we'll send you two emails a week. One when we repurpose this, we'll spin this around as a podcast.
Just checking, Mark. Nathan, how much do you appreciate getting those emails?
What are you going to do? Perfect. What script are you going to write? What are you going to have at my expense? I'm pretty sure you've got to click on a link in an email. I'm pretty sure, so hopefully. Anyway, put your email address in there, and you'll get two emails a week. One when we repurpose this as a podcast, and then on a Thursday when we do our podcast episodes as well. And I just wanted to highlight, because we had a week off because of the Page Builder Summit, which went on last week, I never got to mention or at least I don't think I got to mention that I did a non-podcast the episode, because we do bits and pieces I've got nothing to do. Don't go into any feed or anything like that. They're just standalone episodes. Go out on YouTube, things like that. And I did one with Joe Dolson. We call it the Accessibility Show. And guess what? It's about accessibility. And each time I do it, Joe picks one bit, one tiny little bit of a WordPress website. And in this time, he was trying to find and use menus on restaurant websites. And it literally, you know, the thing that you order the food from, that menu. And it was absolutely brutal. So if you've got a restaurant website, go and see. The key to having a restaurant website is not to always have a PDF as the menu. I know it's convenient, but if you've got accessibility issues, it's not always the easiest thing to use. Anyway, there you go. You can find that in the archive, Accessibility Show archive, just there. And also, hat tip to Joe. This isn't really anything to do with WordPress, but I thought as I've got him on the screen, I might mention something else that he's doing. Joe Dolson has taken over something called Able Player. I confess I've never heard of this product, but it's an accessible, or at least as accessible apparently as you can get, video player, which is open source. And it's been run by somebody called Terrell Thompson since 2010 when they came up with the idea. And obviously over in the recent weeks, they've decided they can no longer put the time into the project. And so they've kind of gifted it and passed the torch on to Joe, who is going to try and keep the whole project going. He's looking for help. He's got a few things that he wants to do, like get rid of the jQuery dependency, and he wants to make the design a little bit better. So if that's your bag and you want to help him make the web a little bit more accessible for video, then go check him out. JoeDolson.com is the URL. Okay, great. Right. Now, what about... Oh, no, that's not going to go first. I'm going to do this one first, because... The way we're doing this show now is if any of the guests bring anything that they just want to mention, we're going to do that right at the top after I've done my little promo bits. And here's the first one from Remkus, who's put a post out called Stop Obsessing Over Image Optimization. There's no point in me summarizing it. You wrote it. What's going on here, Remkus?
Well, I wrote down a whole bunch of words. There's no point in me in summarizing it. People won't read it then.
Yeah, go and read it. And right, moving on. The next piece is
GPT. Please summarize the following URL.
Yeah. That's right. But you, so I mean,
eight words or less. Yeah. With an accent.
Use 50 words, please. So the emphasis is on the second word. I see this happen a lot of times on all different types of performance audits or reviews or whatever. There's folks who kind of think, if I start, you know, because let me preface this with the vast majority of how to make WordPress faster types of tutorials and things written about it are focusing on the heavy things, which are or can be the images, right? It makes zero sense if you're loading a 24 MB image when 100 KB would have been enough. But there's too much effort into this and too little effort into what the larger parts of your website, what kind of parts could actually slow down your site. And spoiler alert, most oftentimes do. So this is just me saying, look, keep focusing on the thing of images, sure, but be aware that this is a thing that on most sites is not going to be the huge issue. It's also super easy to solve, but LCP... other block render blocking types of assets and all that, they deserve your attention probably a little bit or even a lot more.
If I was to give you, Remkus, a vanilla WordPress site and you were setting one up just, I don't know, for a blog or something like that, what would be the way that you would handle images? Are you going to be using plugins or are you writing custom code or are you doing, yeah, go on.
So it depends on who is the editor. Who's the person actually writing it? So if you can be certain that the editorial team behind that understands that before you upload it, it actually needs to be optimized and made smarter, then, you know, you don't have to do much. If that's, I don't know if that person is in place or understands it and I just want to have it solved properly, I think my favorite solution is Cloudflare Images. It essentially takes care of everything. And with Jono's plugin added to it, it's just a great combination. It essentially, whatever image you upload, it always renders the most optimized version because that's how you essentially code it.
I have a feeling that you're pretty like into Cloudflare.
Well,
stop there. Yeah, you're pretty into speed and you like and you like Cloudflare. Is that one of the paid sort of
it is.
Bits and,
It is. But it's part of Cloudflare Pro, which is $25 a month, and it's on the performance and lots of security elements, and Tim can elaborate on those elements it does not cover, but it covers a lot on making your site smarter, faster, all that. Nice. APO is included.
I'd like to talk about the other part that Remkes brought up, which is maybe the harder battle to fight, which is getting people who write words and who are not technical to optimize images smartly before uploading them.
That's the ideal world.
That's to me, that's the battle that I've been fighting for years. I built a little website called crop.express. Plug, but it's free. So just go use it. But it at least resizes images and lets you set up presets so that people can't upload images that are 5,000 by 5,000 when 1,200 by 1,200 would do.
You know what? I'll add it to the page, to the post here, because that is a good tool.
What was it called? Crop.express. Did you just say that?
Yeah.
Let me go and find.
But then the harder part is honestly, because people can see an image size, right? So they're like, oh, it used to be a rectangle and I need it to be a square and now it's a square, but still trying to get your average non-techie to
that's a challenge.
Run it through, even if you tell them the application and you write a document, you write documentation or you make a fun little video or you sing and dance about all you've got to do is drag the image on top of this app or whatever that's going to compress it. They don't do it.
Does your OMG IMG plugin, I know the intention of that plugin is to create images, but does it also handle some of this work as well of reducing the size and creating different versions?
Not technically, yes, but not really in the way that Remkes is talking about. Okay. Like it, because the ideal situation, the primary purpose of OMG was to create social images, and those have a finite defined pixel width and height, but they still ideally could be compressed, or they still could be in the wrong format, or it can still be an issue. It's hard to protect people from themselves all the way down.
I have to ask, so Remkes, in this whole optimization thing, where's it gone? There we go. So this is your piece. I should have said the name of it. So it's on Remkes's website, remkestoreese.com, and you're going to search for Stop Obsessing Over Image Optimization. It was published on the 12th of May. Is the goal here always basically about a search engine? I know that it's this anecdotal kind of back and forth between whether your website is usable, but is it basically to try and not game, but, you know, improve your search engine rankings?
The reason why I published a post?
No, the reason why you would obsess, one might.
Oh, okay. So the every single version of site optimization serves one goal. And that is to optimize your user friendliness of the website. So from a security perspective, from a performance perspective, from an SEO perspective, UX is where it's at. So anything and everything you do that improves that will render a more performant site, and that you can see that in the literal and the non-literal version. But the result is you have a site that is easy to navigate through. So again, if you're loading large images, the loading of your site is just slow. It's just, you know, nobody likes that. You've been on those sites and you click away from them. You don't like clicking to the next page. So all of the analytics solutions that are being used kind of have this sort of tracking in place where they understand, like, look, if you end up on that page and you then look further on that same site, there must be something interesting and pleasant happening on that site. And you wanna service that as much as possible. And large images obviously is a good one to do, but there's a few other things that you know just make it unpleasant to
browse
to consume the site. Yeah. Mm.
The goal was always, well, it always felt like a lot of this stuff was, you know, based around tools that Google would put out, like Lighthouse and things like that. So you could measure if what you did before was better than what you've got now.
Yep.
I'm really not a big user of AI, but everything that I see and all the conversations that I have, I see this tidal wave of people who are stopping to use search engines and are starting to use, you know, for want of a better word, AI, you know, ChatGPT and so on.
Yep.
And it'd be really curious over the next few years how big that shift is and whether or not the whole Google optimization thing will matter.
You're not optimizing for Google.
No, I agree. You're
optimizing for any type of entity that either scours your site. So that's the AI just the same. But you're essentially optimizing your site for humans.
Yeah.
And the better you do a job at that, the more clicks you're going to get, the more views you're going to see through the different mediums. There's no Google favoritism here.
Can I just change the subject a little bit? Because you and I, Remkes, we haven't spoken, so I don't think, since 6.8 landed. And just a tiny aside for a minute, can you explain the speculation rules API and how that works? Because that's obviously a new feature in WordPress 6.8 where basically your WordPress website is going to try in a very kind of, conservative way, it's going to try and preload things that you haven't already interacted with.
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot here, man. Come on.
Oh, sorry.
It's all right, because I did the explanation 2 weeks ago and he's forgotten already.
Was it you? Okay, thank you. Yeah,
it's actually a smart mechanism that kind of figures out your browsing intent. And as you hover something longer than a few milliseconds, then it kind of figures you're going to want to click on this. So it starts loading the page you're almost clicking on right before you actually do. So when you actually do, it looks like it's instant, which makes it a very pleasant thing to look at.
Yeah, yeah. I was chatting to Felix Arntz, who is a Googler, and he's helping the WordPress project with the performance team and things like that. And we got into some really curious ideas, like, wouldn't it be interesting in the future if you could have hardware, like your mouse, if it had a sensor in which could perceive what your finger was about to do, you know, if it could figure out that your finger was descending or something like that, you could push it even a little bit further. It got a bit out of hand.
There are other markets that would appreciate that sort of sentient apparatus more.
Yeah. I was thinking like a mobile phone that could somehow figure out that, you know, your finger was approaching this, because obviously you don't have this hover event on a mobile phone, but that would be an important place to have it. Somehow it could figure out that the finger is kind of just about to descend on a button. I don't know. It's probably taking things.
I think we shouldn't be talking about fingers and descending at all.
Okay.
Not an appropriate subject.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I was trying to hint at that without actually hinting at it.
Moving swiftly on. Okay, so there you go. That's Remkes's piece. Stop obsessing over image optimization. 12th of May. Go check it out. And we don't have anything from Corey, but we do have something from Tim. And do you want to just explain what you're doing, where you're doing it, when you're doing it?
Can I just go back to the previous story very quickly?
That. Right, let me just go back. There we go.
Because I just want to change the title to Stop Obsessing Over Scores.
Nice.
Because I think ultimately when I read the article, that was pretty much, where it was heading along. The problem most people have is they go and go to Google Lighthouse and it will say, you can optimize your image by 30%. And you're not going to get this amazing score unless you do. And the reality is that has scores have very little bearing on actual user experience. So if you're just optimizing for scores, you can still end up with a humongously overbloated piece of junk that takes ages to load, but can get perfect scores.
Most people don't understand this. You can actually get a perfectly scoring site that is experienced as a slow, retarded, ridiculous, like, what am I doing here type of site. It's 100% possible.
Oh, really? You can get it in a...
And the other way around as well.
Okay.
To give you an idea, I had a site that had one of its complaints was that it could save me, that one of my CSS files could be compressed by 30%. The CSS file was 3 kilobytes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But it gave a low score because it was like 30% is a huge margin. It's like
Tim, for $1,000, I will optimize that site for you.
Yeah.
I'll do it for 990, Tim. I undercut him every day.
So those scores really can be meaningless without context. It's not that they don't make a little bit of a guideline, but if you just obsess over those and that alone. But it is made worse because clients can see a score, so they latch onto it. So you'll have people who know all of this who will go, oh, no, I can't possibly, I know how to optimize this. Just let me do my job. And they're going, yeah, but Google says this. And it's like, Google's not saying that. An automated tool is saying that that's got some random stuff in it.
It doesn't account for, like, I've got, one of my big clients is a magazine, right? There's pages where there's no images and 6,000 words, and there's pages with 60 images because they do galleries, and you can't treat those the same. And you also can't say all the images are this big because then you view them on an iPad and they're all suddenly 100% width. And so, it's all contextual, which of course, I mean, we're getting better and closer with with various tools, but at the end of the day, a simple, like you say, a thumbs up or thumbs down kind of score is not going to help anybody.
I'm going to put you on the spot again, Rimkus, but you can just say, I'm not going to answer that question because you might not know. Is there any curious, interesting new thing like down the road with the W3C or anything like that to make this work a bit easier? So you don't have to have multiple image sizes, that things will just be done.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, we already have that technology.
Okay.
But I'm going to answer your question with a different type of answer. This piggybacks on what Tim said. Most people don't understand is that Lighthouse score that you do in the Inspect browser thing, that's a lab result, which is why it can be gamed. The opposite of that is real user measurement, so RUM. RUM measures what factually is happening in the browser. So if you want to learn from, because in the comments, one of the comments is from Jackson. It says, but clients love scores. Great. Get them to adapt to understand Chrome UX. Get them to understand RUM, for instance, RUM Vision. If they want to chase scores, then at least at the bottom line, work with scores that are factual.
Thank you. I'm just browsing through these things. We had, where is that? Has new ones come? There we go. There was this one. Speaking of optimization and SEO, this is my AI bit. We're entering the era of answer engine optimization. Yeah, it's kind of curious. I don't really use AI much, but presumably when you ask an AI for a result, especially if it's like some sort of voice interaction, do you normally just get one? Or does an AI list them out in like a SERP, like, as bullet points or anything like that? I don't really know.
It depends when you asked it.
Yeah.
If you asked it, please give me the top answer to this and only one answer and make it a binary yes or no, then it will waffle for 10 minutes about something completely unrelated to do with cooking and then say yes.
But I wonder, anyway, there's a bit in a minute where we'll come on to some WordPresser who's trying to fill up the AI with the perfect way of asking a question in order to sort of spit out WordPress code. I just don't use these kind of things, so I'm really curious as to how it works. But anyway, there we go. That was James Lau. Thank you very much. Well, Corey said good point.
This is the issue, right? Like, bigger picture, something I struggle with regularly and talk about regularly is we all live in a little bubble. And so like somebody's comment, with the Webologic, Justin's comment about having a client who has an old iPad who complains that the website doesn't have a perfect breakpoint for that iPad. Like, I struggle with this. I have an online game, MexicanTrain.online. Apparently I'm plugging all of my side projects that are not current or.
That was fine. You didn't do it at the beginning. It's all good.
Right. But this is a game I built during COVID I did a fantastic talk about it at WordCamp US last September. Everybody should go watch that video. I'm actually immensely proud of the project and my talk. I will never speak again, ironically, because it's never going to get better than that. But the demographic for that is skews much older. And so most of the people who use that site regularly are older. And so the sheer variety of devices that I hear about, like, oh, it doesn't work on, you know, my BlackBerry from, you know, 96 or whatever. But people still expect that or want that or what have you. All of these is as examples of, like, I mean, it's responsiveness, but we're getting to another degree of responsiveness, which is consumed by AI and then interacted with by people on devices we haven't thought about or in ways that we haven't thought about. And so, like, I was talking to somebody about SEO yesterday, and he's like, right, but, you know, how do I make sure that when people are talking to their phone, interacting with AI, you know, and mention pepper sauce, that my product comes up? And I'm like, futon if I know. Like, there's just no way to know how this information is going to get there. I couldn't hold it.
Nobody will know why that's funny, except the four of us.
Except the mother futon.
Okay.
I'm a mother futoner for even bringing
it
up.
Going to get messy.
But again, it's these, like, you know, how do we talk to clients, right? Like, we live in this in a tech bubble where we do understand scores and we understand when scores aren't relevant, but, you know, the field gets broader and broader and the use cases get more and more bizarre, frankly. And trying to explain that to clients is getting more and more difficult from my perspective.
I had this intuition like 10 years ago that by now we'd be using a whole bunch of different devices for the internet. So I kind of assumed that voice would be a real thing that everybody would throw in their home and it would slowly start to take over. And everybody threw it in their home and then about 2 years later just basically switched them off or asked it to play a song or perhaps the weather. But I don't know if it's the same for you, but not much else. Yeah. Set me a exactly that. That's the big use. Yeah, set me a timer. And then there was, you know, the augmented reality and Google Glass and all these kind of things. It feels like none of that is taking off in any major way. It feels like we're still stuck on basically a screen, a rectangle of pixels of some kind. And I can't see really that changing. But this new interface, so it's not a device, I suppose, but this new interface of AI feels like a real possible change. And I'm definitely, like everybody else, getting caught up in the hype of it all. And I don't know if it'll replace or supplant search in any way, but it definitely feels like it's got the capacity to do that. But to Tim's point earlier about it depends what you ask it, I go to Google because I don't want it. Yeah, thank you, Remkes. I go to Google because I don't want to ask it. Like, I don't want the preamble of how to set up the result it gives me. I just want to go there, type in the one thing and get this predictable set of things back. I don't want to have to preface it with, okay, give me a bullet pointed list of this, that, and the other. Da, 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 da.
I guess the counter to that is you're just shifting the point at which the preamble goes.
Yeah, okay.
If we did use a genuine cooking scenario, let's say you're looking for a recipe to make a cupcake, and you just want, like, please give me a recipe for a cupcake. It will probably return you a recipe for how to do a cupcake. It might not be a good recipe. It might be an amalgamation of recipes, but it will give you a recipe. If you were to go to an average website asking for the recipe of a cupcake, you would get someone's entire life story, including why this happened and how it was how this cupcake changed their lives in this inspirational way. And they are
generational.
They are doing that for search engines. They are doing that for ad traffic. They are doing that not for the user experience. So in that respect, the AI is getting rid of all of that. The downside is it is like talking to a five-year-old. So you might as well have gone to a kid and gone, hey, give me a recipe for a cupcake. You might get the right answer out of it. You might not. It might also go, add snot.
That's right. Yes,
it's fine. Like
the beef in the trifle kind of thing. Yeah, in it goes because it was on Friends in that episode way back when. Oh gosh, this is fascinating. Okay, we've got completely derailed. Let's just see some of the bits and pieces that we got in the comments. So, firstly, James Lau is obviously checking very carefully what's going on in the background of Corey. Just noted Corey's back door. Poster, good, 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 wonderful, good. What? Okay, it's
the,
there.
Those of you, in specifically in England, might remember a hit from, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Oh.
Zed Bias's song, Neighborhood. Nope. And this is a quote.
Okay, from that it, one's but, sadly not yeah. landing for me.
Which, it's pretty obscure. And that's part of why I made the poster and... because I've been waiting for this exact experience.
Finally. And you've planted James Lau in the comments so that he can bring in everybody's attention. I don't know what you're going to think of this, Remcus. This is a product in the WordPress space. Cammy's talking about improvements. There's a product out of the makers of Blog Vault and Malkare and things like that. It's an AI kind of one-click button thing. It's called Airlift. It's great for score improvements for clients that obsess about it. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
It's a big nope.
Big nope.
Okay, as soon as you leave optimization to automating like one-click and I don't have to... no, can't.
Okay.
So I'm sure there's a margin where it's fine, but no.
Years ago, a plugin came out that you could put on your WordPress site that... People could comment when comments were still a popular thing. People could comment, and the comment would only be stored in a cookie on their machine. And whenever they would look at the comments, they would see their comment because it would be pulled from the cookie. But the rest of the world never actually saw their comments. Any of the, and I'm just picturing what we need is a plugin that shows the clients whatever score we want them to see.
I love it.
And it's a gold mine.
And you press a button
mine.
And a green progress bar goes across the screen that doesn't actually do anything. And then the score goes up incrementally, like by 1 or 2 points. And then you press another button that's like, shluff the futon doodads. And you press a button and then the green progress bar goes across.
I think the bigger
question. And then the score goes up by 2 points.
I think the bigger question here is, Corey, why haven't you built it yet?
Yeah, I'm going to go build. It's genius. I'm building this.
So you just bind it to some IP address or something like that. This is the client's IP address. Every time this is served, give them this impeccable score.
Well, so I have a little bit of a confession.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I got fed up once with a client telling me about GT metric scores, and I realized that you could tell from the user agent when they arrived that they were from GT Metrics, so we just served them a white page with hello on it. And it did, to be fair, it did come up. Well, you know, because obviously in GT Metrics, you see the picture.
Yeah.
It blatantly came up with a white screen that said hello. But it got amazing scores. Result.
But the client probably like typed it into GT Metrics, hit return, went away, made a coffee, came back and just looked at the score, right? Is that 100?
Yeah, well, through the board. Actually, no, I had to go back and make one change where I had to... put one image hooked onto from a CDN, because otherwise you didn't get a perfect score for the CDN part, because all the images have to be served over CDN. So I had to do that. So I had to be, literally.
Can I just ask, is this a client you still have?
No.
Okay. That's fine. Oh, that's hysterical. But Corey, we fully expect that plugin to be better. And honestly, you'll sell a boatload of them as well, because it's just a
I'd like an agency version, please.
Yeah, make your clients happy.com. That's great.
$4.99 a year for the agency version. Multi-site install.
Let's have a look here, see what else we've got. It's got James replying. Claude replies with more of a human option for multiple answers. Okay, thank you. What else? I showed her in Google Analytics that 3% of her visitors are on a tablet. Maybe that was to do with that, Brian.
I think that was to do with her old iPad.
Yeah, great, thank you. Cammy, my client contract states, I only test on modern devices and browsers. I'm not designing for your Nokia Flip. Oh, yeah,
that happened.
Oh.
Putting that in the contract is genius.
Cammy is smart.
Yeah, but specifically the Flip. What about some other variant of a Nokia phone?
2002?
Yeah. anything prior to 2002. James Lau says, Brian Cords shared an article that talked about giving your kids AI-powered toys to keep them entertained for you. Honestly, I think if you give kids AI, they're never coming up for air, are they? That'll be the last time you see them.
You do need a curious kid. Not all kids are.
And then something about a podcast, Jack Clark, on AI's uneven impact. Some clients hate the idea. This is Webologic, the idea of their web designer using AI due to all the scaremongering around AI. Well, okie doke.
Don't mention it to them then.
Yeah, or install the soon to be announced plugin from Corey Mass. And show.
Do we have a working title yet, Corey?
Yeah. Call it Mother
Futon. I'm over here typing into ChatGPT describing the plugin and saying, give me 20 good names. And
then okay, whilst you do that, I want to hear of those in a minute. I'm curious to see what kind of things it comes up for. Do the panel have any websites they use for multi-device website testing? Well, that wouldn't be a question for me. I'm going to hand that to the pros. Do you have a website? I guess by website, you mean like a SaaS tool or something like that, do you?
He means like things like browser shots and
stuff. Yeah, where it just shows like four configurations of browsers. Yeah, browser shots. There you go. That's a good one. They're 10 a penny, really, aren't they? I imagine. I've got one called Hoverify, which is a Chrome extension in the browser, and it shows all of those kind of things as one of the things.
A slight twist on this. I use a browser. It's a Chrome fork, whatever we're calling them these days. But there's a browser called Responsively, or Responsively App.
Okay.
And it basically just opens the same page, in desktop size, tablet size, and cell phone size, mobile. And so as you're scrolling, they all scroll together, and it's just a really easy, like, it's not totally perfect because obviously, you're not actually looking on it in an actual device, but it's a neat way to see the same page on all devices at the same time. And if you scroll one, they all scroll together.
Nice.
Kind of thing. So, slight twist on what you're describing.
What was that called? Responsively.
Responsively App.
Responsively App. Go and use your favorite ChatGPT clone of choice to figure out how to
exactly. Find
that. Okay. Or just Google it, you know, like the old fashioned way. Right, so it just occurs to me, did we finish explaining that Tim had a course? Did we get through to the end of that, Tim? Was there anything?
Yeah, we didn't even start it.
Totally got hijacked. That was what I was thinking. I was thinking it's on the screen. But right, start again. What are you running here? Tim is running a course that you can find it at wpsecurity101.com. Right, let's go back to the beginning. Reset. When is it? What are you doing? Give us the skinny.
So it's a course rather than a workshop. So it's a learn at your own pace style course that's going to be launched the end of the May. Very may now have to shift into the beginning of June. You know, on there it says that there's over 4 hours of video content. 28 hours have been filmed, and we're currently editing it down to closer to maybe 10. So that 4 hours was wildly optimistic on my part of I could get everything done in 4 hours.
Wow.
So you're looking at closer to 10, and then we'll probably have another 10 plus hours of bonus materials to feed out to people at the end of this. But yeah, it's for anybody who is in the WordPress space as a WordPress. I've been using the phrase WordPress developer or WordPress professional because it doesn't necessarily need development skills. But if you are work for an agency or you work in-house and you are the WordPress person, this is probably the course for you. It is designed around this idea of it being like for professional development and professional as in your personal professional development, not as in coding. And so it should work if you have like CPD set up inside your organization and company. Hopefully the hours you spend on this course should count. And if they don't, you can email me and I will go and ask your HR people nicely to make them cats.
He's going to make up a certificate just like he did with GT Metrics. He's going to make something up.
It does come with certificates. So
nice. You can stop right there. That's all the people needed to know. Does it have a certificate?
Yeah, the plan is to come with a shiny badge. And the reason for it is I don't know if anybody's ever had to look at WordPress security training courses. They are We're not allowed to swear. They're not very good at all.
We can say shite, though, right? That's not
the right. That's not allowed either.
No. Oh, okay. So they're not very good. And
crap? Can you say crap?
Oh, good. Okay. This is the next 10 minutes gone, isn't it? As we go through the dictionary of swear words. Carry on.
So I thought I'd make one that wasn't so terrible.
So terrible, yeah.
Thank you. Okay, it always descends into silliness, doesn't it? WPsecurity101.com. Can I just say, dragging it back to some sort of seriousness, I think there's quite a lot of how to describe it. There's a bit of snake oil in the WordPress space around security, and it is not Tim. I think it's fair to say that Tim really, 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 really knows his stuff. And if you are looking for something in the WordPress space, this would be my port of call. Go and check it out. So tons of content in there. WPsecurity101.com. There you go. And Corey's having a right old laugh. What did I do?
Dear ChatGPT.
Here we go. Developer. Okay, go on.
My clients are obsessed with performance and optimization scores. Please help me come up with 10... slightly funny, slightly snarky titles and descriptions for this plugin.
Okay.
Number one, Score Whisperer Pro gently persuades those pesky performance metrics to tell a more optimistic story. Number two, Metric Mirage. Number three, Page Speed Placebo.
Yeah, but that's giving away a little too much.
Yeah.
Optimize me not.
I think these are...
Him's like all quiet because he had all those names on him already.
It's definitely undermining. I love these, though. I think that's brilliant. And presumably there are like six more.
Here's the one that will actually work, because you're right, Remkes. Like those give too much away. This one is called Score More.
Yeah.
M-O-R?
M-O-R-E.
We 100% guarantee that at the end of this testing, you will have improved your WordPress score by any metric, whatever metric you want. That's a genius idea. Thank you so much. A comment just related to what we had a minute ago. This rings a bell. I haven't used it, but Blisk, that's another, I think, variant of the browser that is sort of pointing towards developers a bit more. We're nearly an hour in and we actually haven't got to our first story yet, which is somewhat of a record. So let's quickly see if we can get some of these bits and pieces done. WordPress had, for a very short space of time, WordPress had a media core. I don't know if this is going to matter to anybody else, but for me and, you know, the
24 people, other people.
Yeah. Where is it there on this? Yeah. 24.
Actually, were you even on the email update list, or are you?
I was. Essentially, about a year ago, a team was formed to try and make it so that you could distribute WordPress news more easily. The idea really would be that there'd be this like clearinghouse with it somewhere, and then the stories would get told to people who produce newsletters and podcasts and YouTube channels and things like that. But this story is basically just to say it kind of fizzled out. I think trying to do this thing from a central location probably was never going to work. The people who produce news are kind of, as soon as they get something, they're going to write it down and publish it on their own. And so, yeah. Anyway, so if you had any interest in that, probably you didn't.
Nathan, have you ever had like an embargo from like the WordPress.org team where they've said you cannot tell anybody about this till the X date? Always just fed to you and then you were to disseminate it when you wanted?
No, I think once I did.
Did you obey it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I get a lot of, like, for example, I'm under embargo for something at the minute that I'm not going to tell you about because it's under embargo. And I do, I would totally honor that. If I say I'm going to honor it, then I will honor it. But not usually it's for commercial reasons. You know, somebody's got a plugin and they're not quite ready, but they want to just see if they could maybe do a podcast episode or something like that. And so they only put it in words. They say, this is embargoed. Can you honor that? And I say, yes. but it's never anything of any importance. You know, the sky would not fall in for anything I've ever been told to embargo.
I once got myself on a mailing list that I'm still on somehow, and I get every tech journalist on the planet sending me a media press releases,
yeah,
random things, and they all start with "this is embargo till the front of the date," and I'm like, I am just going to set up a site that just is called embargo release and just because I don't ask for this stuff, it just turns up. I was wondering if that was maybe part of the problem, is that there wasn't any coordination for releasing of information, and that was one of the reasons this failed.
I think also it's because the people who do the media in the WordPress space, they're obviously quite keen to, as soon as they hear something, if they think it's important to their readers, they just want to turn it around. And so having some sort of clearinghouse inside a .org, which was probably going to be only .org stuff, and you know how slow that Leviathan can move. Most things, I think, got picked up more quickly and written in the way that the journalists, you know, like Ray at the repository, for example, would like to write it before anything happens. So anyway, that enterprise ended. So I don't know if anybody's got anything to say about that, but probably not.
I think it was never the right thing to do.
No. Okay.
There's too many things you can raise why that is not a smart construction of wanting to get stuff out.
So there you go. The media core has come to an end. So that's the end of that. Right. Okay. Moving on in that case. Let's see if we can keep the pace going a little bit.
Okay. I just need Corey's message.
What's he written? Where's it gone? Oh.
Maybe don't.
Oh, really? Okay. I won't. It was there briefly on the screen. If you want to rewind, dear viewer, dear listener, whatever that was is now in the annals of history. So this one. This is quite interesting. So A2
has... perfect timing, not too soon.
Okay. I will read that and probably have a heart attack or something in a moment. A2 Hosting, that you probably all know in the WordPress space, you know, they've been around for ages. They've rebranded along with they've got a parent company and they're now called hosting.com. They used up $2 million in order to purchase that. Which I know that that's still a ton of money. And if somebody said to me, do you want $2 million? I'm going to say yes. But I would have expected that URL to cost a ton more. I don't know why, but I would have thought it would have been more into like the tens and twenties and millions for some reason. Anyway, they are now called hosting.com, and they have been bought under the umbrella of a larger organization, which again seems quite new to me. Maybe you all know tons about it, but called World Host Group. And so if you're an A2 hosting company person, then I guess at some point the login and all of that is going to change. But quite an investment, considering it's a WordPress-specific company. I don't know why that would matter, but, you know, I would have thought somebody with bigger shoes than WordPress to fill might have taken this on, something like Squarespace or Wix or something.
I didn't think that A2 was necessarily WordPress specific. There
is it not? That's the way I always. Yeah, that's how I always think about it.
They've been very big supporters of WordCamp at WordCamps and of WordPress itself. But I don't. I think they are the your typical hosting company. They do the whole domain hosting, email, all the other gump. They would have sold you an SSL certificate and all that stuff for a very long time. As for World Hosting Group, they seem to be buying up lots of companies. And A2 is, I think, the biggest one I've heard of, but I've seen lots of little hosting companies being bought up by them. And they've got quite a large presence, which when they start consolidating those, is going to make them an interesting group to pay attention to. Not at the sort of like GoDaddy scale, but they're still going to become pretty big players pretty quickly.
So they haven't been around for too many years, founded in 2019. So this is not A2 Hosting, obviously. This is this umbrella organization, World Host Group, founded in 2019, rapidly growing through acquisition. They now have 800 staff, 11 offices, 40 plus global locations. I'm guessing that means data centers and things like that. 650,000 customers with over 3 million websites hosted. Okay. All right. Let's see. Anybody got anything to add to that? There's deafening silence.
Yeah, but what I said when we reviewed this before the show, because yes, we are that organized here.
We have about 4 minutes before we go live.
Actually, we have 2 minutes and then we overran.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
$2 million is a lot of money. On the other hand, it's a perfect tax write off. It lowers your
revenue. So, okay.
If you can afford it well, then I think it's a very sound investment. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I know you said it's a sound investment. I was trying to look it up to try and find the exact pricing, but as I remember it, hosting.com sold for an awful lot more a few years earlier.
Did it?
So it's gone down in price.
Interesting.
I mean investment from a branding perspective, like hosting.com. That's a cool name to have. Like, it's straightforward. It says, you know, does what it says on the tin. It's very brandable. I think it's a smart move.
Whoever Ray is using for her ad insertion, they've got it all figured out. It's not doing it now. They've just flipped through. But just a moment ago, this ad down here on the repository website was showing. Yeah, there you go. Kinsta. Then it moved on to Pressable. Then it moved on to a bunch of other things. So it's definitely targeting the right audience there. Second, anyway, there you go.
WordPress.com is hosting.com.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be more blunt for people who are non-technical.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I thought. That's why I thought it was so valuable, and why I thought 2 million seemed like not a lot of. I know it's a crazy large amount of money, but you know what I mean. When you hear of, did you hear, for example, that AI.com is available, and it's got the asking price is $100 million, and it's owned by a guy whose initials are AI. You know, it's like Andrew something, whatever his surname is, begins with I. And he bought it back in the late 90s just because he wanted a domain for, you know, before any notion of AI, he just wanted a domain to keep his web property intact. And now he's decided to sell it for $100 million. And it turns out there's a guy in New York who that's all he does for a living is just sell high price domains. And $100 million. So if anybody watching this show has got $100 million burning a hole in the back of their pocket, firstly, can we meet at some point? Just, you know, a coffee or something, you know, something like that. And then secondly, you could go and buy that domain for yourself.
Do you need a tax write-off?
I would love a tax write-off. If I had $100 million to write off in tax, I would be very happy. Okay, what have we got here? We've got a few comments. So this is about hosting.com. They stopped charging me the 20% VAT, so my reseller account just dropped. Okay, that's when it moved over from A2, is it? Okay. Said they don't need to charge tax now that they've changed name. Gosh, that's an interesting reason not to charge tax. And then somebody at me, just a pivot, it would be good to discuss buying or selling web agencies in a future podcast. Thank you. We will think about that. That's a good idea. Okay, moving
on. I'm wondering if, rather than the change of names, it was probably that he also changed organizations and place of incorporation, yeah, which would probably explain the actual 20%. Because, yeah,
I think so.
Your tax service has this one easy trick to afford.
That's right. They've changed names. That'd be great. Love that. No more tax for you. Couple of things just on the community side. I don't know if you guys want to comment on this, but somebody in our community, and I do apologize for getting your name wrong, but Prashant Baldha is the recipient of the Yoast Care Fund for this year for the contributions to WordPress. You can find this on the Yoast blog. But then somebody, I don't know if it was in response to this, this is Asta Jain. It's over at astajain.in, I presume they're in India, wrote a post called How WordPress Community Helps You, Scholarships, Grants and Support Programs. And it's just a list. It's quite helpful, I think, a list of all the different places that you can go to seek finance. Let's say, for example, you are hoping to get yourself off to a WordCamp or something like that. So it lists things like the Diversity Scholarship, the Kim Parcells Scholarship, the one that we've just seen, Yoast Diversity Fund, GoDaddy Fellowship, and a few more. So if you are in the WordPress space and you are contributing a lot and you would like that to turn into something to get you on a plane to an event, pay for your travel or some other things as well, go and check that out. I will put the link into the show notes. Right, another community bit. I didn't even know this was a thing. I've been tied up doing this summit, which is now finished. WordCamp US, which has been, you know, going on, well, pre-COVID, and then it took a pause and then it came back. It was in Portland last year. The idea was that it would be in Portland for 2 years, going back to that model of 2 years in the same location. I didn't realize that many of the people that were involved in organizing that event had stepped down, maybe because their contributions had been cut by their companies or what have you. And then Ray released this to say that hopefully WordCamp US is back on the agenda. The titles of the piece is WordCamp US 2025 moves ahead with new leads after automatic layoffs disrupt planning. And it basically, in theory, it's supposed to happen. If you read the article, a few key people have either had burnout or they can't contribute the time because their company's no longer helping them with that. But one of the key things to notice is that the team that have stepped in, I think Ray described them as not, I don't know, they don't have as much experience, let's just put it that way. So we'll see how that pans out. But also, they are quite far behind. If you were to map all of the different dominoes that had to fall last year to make it happen, they're quite a long way behind because the project was stalled. So, gosh, I've never organized an event of this magnitude. I know Remkes has. So I presume being delayed is fairly seismic and difficult. But
I don't think the delay is that problematic just yet.
Great.
First of all, there's going to be a handbook they can follow, and it's the same location, so it essentially means the exact same things they can do. And sure, less experience doesn't help, but there's people mentoring still. What are we? We are May now, mid-May.
Yeah.
So May.
It's going to be
July, August.
August.
Yes, it's 3 months. It's the tightest I've ever done it, so it's possible.
The
Would it be my choice? No.
If they're in doubt.
What did you say, Remkes? I missed the last sentence.
Would it have been my choice to do it inside of 3 months? No.
No. Okay. Sorry, Tim.
I was going to say, if they're in doubt, they can call the WordCamp Glasgow team, who put together an entire WordCamp in 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yeah. And, wow. And you can, but probably not for 2,000 people.
Yeah. I suppose one piece that does help slightly is that the venue is the same, so they don't have to do any of the wrangling of all that. I presume it's been bought and paid for. So, yeah.
I don't like the idea of doing two WordCamps of this type back-to-back in the same location.
Why do they do that? Is it just so they get a better deal on the accommodation?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think it's boring to start with. You know, you can get people excited about going there one day, but how many people go like, yeah, I kind of been there.
Yeah, yeah.
What am I going to do there again? I don't know. I still don't see that logic.
Okay. Well, anyway, good luck. There are a bunch of people listed in this article. I should just name them if I can find them. Gail Wallace, Nicholas Garofalo. Sorry, Nicholas. Carla Campos and Megan Marcel, and no doubt a whole bunch of other people as well. But it does seem that Marcel in particular, Megan Marcel, has been on the organizing team for, got 15 years of experience in event organization. So maybe that brings a ray of hope. So there we go. That's that one. If you were planning on going, it would seem that it's still going to be possible. But obviously speakers and tickets and all of that are still to be announced. Right, moving over to European shores. WordCamp Europe is happening in, what is it, like 20 days, something like that, in Basel, Switzerland. I think you can still get tickets for that. So if you want to attend, I think you can still buy tickets. But there's a curious thing which is happening, which is tacked on to the event. So this has got literally nothing to do with the event. I think they would be at great pains to point that bit out. But there's an event which is being added on to the end of one of the days. If somebody can tell me that, there you go, right at the top, 6th of June. I think this is going to be an interesting story to watch as it develops. This seems to be a place where, anyway, it's called altcontrol.org or altcontrol.org. And they had 100 tickets. They sold them all out. And it seems to be a place where people are going to be going to raise alternative ways to the way that WordPress has been doing things in the more recent past. I'm not entirely sure what's going on. I think it's going to be one of these events, a bit like PressConf, where the hope would be that if you go, you have the you have that kind of what's said in the room stays in the room kind of mentality. I don't know that that's true. Maybe that's not the way that they're pitching it, but it kind of felt like that from the bits and pieces that I picked up. So hopefully, if you're going, you know, you'll be able to get something out of it. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be fascinating to see what people are doing. I don't know if anybody in this arena, Remkus or Tim, want to tell us if they're going or not. Maybe that's something you don't want to share. And everybody's scratching their heads.
Well, I'm not going to WordCamp Europe.
Oh, okay. But you are going to this. Nice. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I genuinely at one point pondered it. When it was very early on, there were some discussions and there was, I think it is designed as an add-on to WordCamp. They are sort of half expecting you to be an attendee or at least this to be a follow-on to it. But it looks like a fun event.
You're muted, Nathan.
We've just turned Nathan off.
Sorry.
Easier this way.
I did that because when I eat my crisps, it's very loud and nobody wants to hear that. So I muted it and then I forgot to unmute it. That's right. Thanks. I'm joking. But I think it ends, this event is in the evening only. So when the regular sessions end at the regular work.
It's like 5 till 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah. And I think it's like a 5 minute walk away or something like that. So, okay.
I'm going.
Okay. Yeah, so Remkus is going. Okay, there we go. Right, so that's that. But you can't get any tickets. Maybe there's a wait list or something, but it seems to be sold out. Right, very, very quickly, really very, very quickly, because we're going to run out of time otherwise. Post status has now been taken over by Joost de Valk and Marika van der Acht. I don't know if there's more people involved, to be honest, in the background there, but those are the two names that I'm familiar with. They've taken WP Speakers over from Michelle Frechette. It's a website you can go to and, you know, find out who is available to speak in the WordPress world. I don't know where this fits into the broader plan for post status, but anyway, that's now been taken over. So congratulations to Michelle for moving that one on. What else have we got? This is interesting. How do you say this? Godam. What do you think? Go damn, I think it is. What would go damn mean? Is there
digital assets management?
Oh yeah, of course. That's actually what it means.
No. I think they had a name first and then made up an acronym.
Yeah, they made it. That's
go damn.
Yeah, go damn.
I mean,
why not?
Yep.
This comes out of RT Camp, which is an Indian development company who have been contributing a ton of time to the WordPress project. I just thought I'd raise it. It's kind of curious. If you want your media library to be a little bit more than it is already, one of the things that they mentioned right at the start, so I feel it's like the MVP for this product, is that if you're creating video content, you can upload it and then pick your CDN of choice. I think it defaults to Bonnie CDN, if you've heard of that one. It's pretty cheap, as my understanding, you know, for the amount of data that you pass through it. But what it'll do is it'll take your video and it will then transcode it into all the different assorted types. So, you know, 720p, 1080p, 1440, and so on. Thereby, you know, when you go to YouTube, you can click that little quality icon and that doesn't happen by accident. There's not some magic going on the fly. Google has transcoded it into different separate versions of the video. So this brings that capability into your media library. You can see a picture there. But also, this would be quite good for marketers. You can put call to actions and things overlaid onto the top of your videos. So, I don't know, you've got a new plugin, like, I don't know, some sort of image generation plugin, something like that, let's say. And you want to demonstrate, you know, hey, buy now, get 20% off and what have you. You can do that as well. What else? And then they've got, you know, the usual assortment of bits and pieces in the media library where you can get statistics and what have you. Brand new product. That's me doing the short version. Anybody want to comment? If not, I will move on. That's a no. That's a big, fat no. Okay, right, fine. What have I got next? No, not that one. New product, another new product. This is Adam Prizer, who, I don't know, many, many, many years ago, he had this giant YouTube channel. What was it called? WP Crafter, that was it. WP Crafter. I think he stepped away from making so many YouTube videos now because he's moved into products. He's got Cart Flows and a bunch of others. The name escapes me. Anyway, there's a new one in the list of products that he's responsible for, and it is called Modern Cart. And I think the upsell here is basically it's a shopping cart in a sidebar, but the idea would be that you bind it to your WooCommerce store, and you can also do little things like, what do they call it? Like upsells at the cart page. So instead of it, so the little sidebar swoops in, and before somebody clicks buy now and what have you, it just inserts little extra bits and pieces into the sidebar. So it's their take on it. On a checkout in a sidebar, basically. And again, I'm going to ask, does anybody want to comment on that? And
I'm just trying to not comment about the debug code that's left on the page.
Oh, say more. Oh, is that at the top left?
The top left.
Yeah. Oh, what you see, Tim Nash, he's got his beady eye.
What
happened? Anybody else see that, or was it just Tim?
What happens if you refresh? No, I saw it. I was literally going to say
just being polite about it.
Yeah.
If I refresh, it's still right there.
Awesome.
Okay. What? Okay, Tim, with your
branding
hat on, what is that telling you? Go on.
Well, nothing. It just tells me at some point someone's echoed out the URL. Where it is at the top of the page probably means that it's being echoed out before the headers. So the headers are probably all slightly screwed as well. but yeah, it's just debug. Everybody does it. It's just a bit of a oops when it's still on. Hopefully that page is hugely cached and therefore it's just the cache, and when they flush their cache, they'll get rid of it.
I don't know if it binds onto their Cartflows product, the one that they've already got, but anyway, there it is. Go check it out. You can see that for yourself. However, I'm racing to get to this one because I think this will be an interesting one. Again, caveat, I don't use AI very much, but I managed to sit through this video with great... I lapped this one up, actually. It's Elliot Richmond, who is a UK developer and manufacturer of high quality pizzas, I think it turns out as well. And he's made a video about looking at the experimental feature API. As soon as things like that exit my mouth, I realize I'm totally above my pay grade. So I want somebody else to tell me what the experimental feature API is and how it works. I watched Elliot's video. It was very entertaining. But I'm not really the person to talk about it. I'm going to guess it's either Remkes or Corey or Tim that can take this. Anybody? Bueller? Anybody? No, you're just being mean now, aren't you? The three of you. You reached some sort of... Have you been in the private chat saying, we're not going to talk anymore? You can go check it out, basically.
Tim, it's cached. If you look at, if you cache bust the URL, the
right. Oh, we're back to the
I had to know. I had to know.
Okay.
Feature API is a very interesting thing. I think it's very tough to summarize it. I think this is a good example of you need to go into the library on GitHub. Check it out, read up on it, what it does. But it has a huge potential.
He has this sort of like chat interface where he can get out of the WordPress website. You know, we're used to that kind of content creation thing, like make me an image and then go wow when it creates you the image, or make me some text and we go wow when it makes you some text. This seemed like a bit more of a conversation with your website along the lines of, you know, what's my website site name?
Yep.
How many posts have I got? Have I got, you know,
you can talk to your site essentially.
Right. Yeah.
But that's even that is a very limited way of explaining what it does. This is a good example where people should just, you know, check it out, play with it, because it's wild what you can do with it.
And also, I would like to point out that Elliot spends an inordinate amount of time making his videos look really good. This one is called The Future of AI Plus, the plus symbol, WordPress, a look at the experimental features API. It's about 25 minutes. It's not even. What am I talking? It's 8 minutes. So it's pretty quick to consume, but you'll learn a lot. It's really interesting. Okay. If that's the case, shall we move on? Right. Where are we now? as I said at the beginning, I don't really use API much. I don't use AI all that much. But this person does, Jonathan Williams. I caught sight of this. This is the lengths that somebody will go to in order to try and make AI spit out something coherent. Is this how it works? When you go to an AI, do you have to always preface everything with a ton of stuff like this? So on the screen is tons of text. For example, this is the prompt. You want to get something out of an AI and you want it to be correct, accurate, robust, what have you, in the WordPress way. Here's the prompt. You are an expert WordPress developer. You are all up to date on WordPress best practices and coding standards. You write complete and working WordPress code, including custom plugins. You use WordPress best practices in all provided code. When asked to provide code, you do not include placeholders. Instead, you provide complete copy and paste ready solutions. And then there's more coding instructions. I won't read it. Does that work?
So, Corey?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to point out, this looks very similar to, so for Cursor, the VS Code fork that has AI tightly embedded, if you go to cursor.directory, there is, people have uploaded their own sets of essentially this real high level I've pulled up one that I think I'm using. That starts with, you are an expert in WordPress, PHP, and related development technologies, and then key principles, write concise technical code, follow WordPress coding standards, blah, 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 blah. And it's meant to be, at least in something like Cursor, you can set rules that you don't have to paste every time or even paste the first time. That's just kind of always sitting in your project settings or in your app settings.
Oh, I see. Level.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're in VS Code, the environment, it's like that's in the background. This is metadata, which is kind of understood, the exchange between you and the AI. This is always the context of that. Okay. Well, sorry.
ChatGPT also has two options you can fill out and have this be running for every single thing you do in ChatGPT. But to answer your question, is this how it's done? Yes. And I would even argue this is a light version.
So there's more. You could be much more thorough, right? Okay.
I actually think you should be. I think it's a good start, but this is kind of high leveling over how you would like the end result. But if when you start diving into the specificity that you actually would like to see and for it to follow, then I think this is a good start. But this should be elaborated quite a bit.
That's so curious. I mean,
I'll jump in once in a while and add more rules to it as makes sense. If I notice patterns, like I'm often doing WordPress and React. And so I also, you know, I've got WordPressy rules, but I've also got React rules. And it'll often want to add a new library instead of using one I've already got installed or something like that, there are rules about, you know, do not just make up hooks inside WordPress, make sure they actually exist, and you can actually link to the documentation and stuff like that. So you can take this pretty far.
And when you do this, again, I'm not experienced with this. When you do this, does it reliably, stick to the instructions that you put in there? Or does it still hallucinate around?
This is why you want to use as much prompting as you can possibly get out of your keyboard. There's even so, when you've covered something from four or five different angles for it to specifically do, you still cannot rely on it to actually do it, because it depends on how the sentence is written. You just cannot assume it actually still does it. But the more you use here, let's say you use four times what you see here, it has a much higher chance of actually doing what you wanted to do than what you see here.
Gosh.
And so there are two things I want to bring up. One is expounding on what Remkes said, I'm now seeing a lot of people that are using AIs kind of against each other in a good way, where you would take this, you would dump it into one, I guess it could even be multiple layers of the same AI, but like ChatGPT and say, Claude wrote this, limited thing, show up Claude, write it, make it four times longer, but full of value kind of thing. And then drag that back into Claude and go, ChatGPT wrote this, but it's messy, tighten it up. And you can actually like back and forth, back and forth. Ideally, you would still go in and pull out any chuff. But it's you don't have to write the four times the rules, or even go find them. Like AI on AI on AI is yielding pretty good results for a lot of people.
That's fascinating.
The other thing that I want to bring up, because I've had this conversation twice in the last week that I took for granted, but hadn't really thought through. And so I feel like this is a good spot with 9 minutes left and 10 more links to cover, is traditionally you had the proverbial and not proverbial 10X coder, the programmer who was just exceptionally good at writing code. And the stereotype, at least, is inversely that person was often not good at speaking English to other human beings. Right. And then you've got people who are not native English speakers, and or who struggle with language construction in general, Right. I realized now more and more what we're talking about and exactly what Remke said. Like, it depends on how you structure these sentences, the words you use, the level of detail. It relies on an unbelievably sophisticated depth of English language construction in order to get better and better code based on better and better language that we're putting in there. And I was like, oh, thank goodness that I'm a mediocre developer, but I'm really good at talking, because I now have a huge advantage over some of the other developers who I've met along the way.
I keep hearing this thing that, if you basically get yourself good in this universe of prompting, then you are lining yourself up very well for the future. And anybody that is not doing that is obviously, they're going to have an Achilles heel and find it harder to gain work and all of that in the future. Yeah.
It all breaks down. How well can you express what you want?
Does it not infuriate you, all this, though? Is that like in the same way that code, when it went wrong, was infuriating, finding debugging it?
At times in moments, but the more you learn, okay, this approach doesn't work, let me try another one. You'll find ones that work and you remember those. You paste that in your PKM somewhere, your notes, and you'll start building from that. It's, you learn as you go, as it learns as it goes. And the fun thing is the logic, the engines behind it, the models it uses, they keep improving. So it is fun. Like Tamit just said, it's in the comments, it's exciting and it's fun. It is, because you can see is, I'm wasting 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes into writing the perfect prompt, and then 10 minutes into, refining it and all that. The end result, maybe you spent a full hour trying to get a solution, but that solution, if you started writing it from scratch or whatever, would have cost you maybe a day. So, the better you become, the more sense it makes to go like, okay,
plus all the years it took you to get to the point where you could actually begin writing the code as well.
Of course,
that's the curious, that seems to be where the excitement is out in the wider world, is just that novice to something thing, the fact that people who've got no experience with any kind of code can produce something, you would hope, for their own personal use only, not maybe trying to pitch it as a SaaS app or what have you. But fascinating. Tammy, I can see that you're making loads of comments. I'm really sorry. With the time that we've got left available, not going to get too many of them back on. But let me see if I can put a few of them on. Something probably about the,
the API. One, the
one. Oh, is it? Okay. This one?
No, that's,
oh, no, that's James. Apologies, this one. I brewed. Okay, so Tammy, I brewed. Oh, interesting. Okay, we're into the language of brewing. I brewed three apps into prototypes this weekend and found out one idea was worth it. Wouldn't have done that with an AI. Did it have anything to do with making websites appear faster? That's what I want to know. Tammy, if you weren't here at the beginning, you won't get that. Sorry. What else have we got? They've already begun moving. They've already begun removing the prompting classes and certificates from the colleges that started offering them. AI will write the prompt for you. Yeah. Are their thoughts? Oh, interesting. Okay. Right.
All the fun. Funny thing is, you can ask it, this is my prompt, what is missing? And it will tell you the very obvious things it's missing or the refinement it needs. It's still not going to be perfect, but it's just funny how it works.
Well, you all seem to be having a really fun time with it. That's the bit that I'm missing out on, is the fun. And I suppose it's more
fun. We're scared for to people. Say otherwise because the robots will rise up and tell us that.
Yeah, but the other thing is you know what it's like not to be able to do this.
Yeah.
And so it's genuinely interesting to see how quickly you can get over the hurdles that you know exist.
Yeah.
Whereas my 16-year-old son, if he were to get into this, there wouldn't really be that thing. So I don't know quite how curious it would be. There'll just be an expectation that I'll speak into this thing and it'll achieve this thing for me. And it won't be, wow, look what that can do.
You know? I mean, even, I have a relatively young child, and they now code as they were taught to code using Scratch and then on to Python. And now they're using ChatGPT and Cursor more and more. Just so, and they do it through a much more natural language process. If I told them, hey, look at this big prompt, they'd look at that and go, well, you don't need that. What are you doing that for? And they'll just chat away and get the result they want because they believe that failure is a reasonable thing to happen, and that then you iterate on it. And when you get stuck in a loop, they just discard the whole conversation and start a new one up and go that way. And now that from a developer's personality is very hard to do. This idea that, you know, we want to scope everything out, and we want them to generate these mythical one shots. And then there is allowed to be refinement, but it should be minimal refinement. And that's a mentality coming from a developer rather than someone who's just intuitively using this for the first time. So we've got all the advantages of knowing the languages and how things should be structured and all that background that we possess, that's also baggage at the same time. And that someone who comes along and goes, I wanted to do this and I want kittens flying around on the screen. It's like, okay, you could have kittens flying around on the screen. They're also where it's really terrifying.
I want kittens flying around on the screen. That's going to be, if somebody can just make that happen now, that would be great.
There is at least several scripts.
There's no doubt.
Downstairs with kittens flying around on the screen.
With 3 minutes left or whatever, Tammy's queued us up nicely because we're going to miss a bunch of stories and just quickly sweep into the last one. She says, yes, AI refines your prompts if you have a solid conversation. It will even do Figma and user flows for you, but it won't get the perfect shaping up. And that leads us nicely to the whole Figma thing. I don't know if you saw, but in the last number of days, I'm going to say 10 days or something, this happened. Figma, which is a tool, obviously Tammy's using it. I think it's fair to say it's become like the de facto tool for many, many designers. Again, I don't use it. I don't know, but I hear the name all the time. They have launched a product called Figma Sites, whereby you can turn your Figma designs in their UI and it will turn it into a website with, you know, no interaction with code whatsoever. And apparently, you know, the UI is quite clever. It's really interesting. However, there was There was a tsunami of people in the web development space who immediately, you know, aimed their targets at the code, quick view source, only to realize it was mental, for want of a better word. There was all sorts of people. So anyway, there's the post you can see about it happening. And then in the WordPress space, we had Adrian Roselli leading with this. Do not publish your designs on the web with Figma sites. You can find out more. I'll link to that. Joe Dolson, who we mentioned earlier. I mean, this is, wow. The true path to garbage code, Figma sites. And I don't know if you've come across this chap, Kevin Powell, but a real heavy hitter in the sort of W3C kind of HTML CSS space. Figma Sites is worse than you might have thought. And I watched his stuff for a few minutes. There are just these like literally bizarre moments where a heading is the last letter of a heading is in a span all of its own.
Yeah.
Like just the final letter. And it just, Like, that's deliberate. Somebody did that on purpose. Anyway, the takeaway is, if certainly from an accessibility point of view, and if you don't want your code to be cluttered, and I guess Remke's coming all the way back round to optimization, apparently Figma sites have not done a great job out of the gate. So,
No, it's horrible output, and it's diffs and spans everywhere.
Yeah.
That said, you can I can't say the word I want to use, but you can on this all you like. But
I know, yeah.
This is the first iteration.
Yeah, and
look at what AI did two years ago.
Yeah.
So project that in 2 years. I mean, they're not dumb at Figma. They know what they're doing, but apparently not fully yet on this. So it is a matter of time and waiting.
You can imagine that with the kind of subscriber base that they've got fairly deep pockets. These kind of things are music to their ears. When
the
somebody
same goes for Canva,
Canva.
Those are site builder sites now, whether you like it or not.
But just imagine the amount of free feedback they just got from people outraged. Yeah. You know, tons of user feedback. You know, freely given hour long videos from people saying, "Well, this is wrong." This, and I imagine
they'll
say
it again.
Go back to the drawing board. Yeah.
The guy I met with over the weekend, who's launching a pepper sauce business, doesn't care.
No, does not care. Yeah.
And a few extra divs on his brochure site isn't going to kill him.
Yeah.
Probably not even hurt him.
No, that's true. Okay. So, it would be nice to think that they got it right.
Don't kill people, tables do.
Oh.
There you go.
That's got to be the name of this episode. Can you remember that, Tim? Because we've already overrun. So divs don't kill people. Tables do. They really did back in the day. Do you remember trying to line things up with tables? Man, that was just pure agony. But it was the only way of doing it. Right, we're done. That is it. I'm sorry. We had a load more that we were going to talk about, but we got down a rabbit hole at the very beginning. So it is with regret that I say adieu to... I'm going to get this so wrong. No, I'm not. Remke Stavris over there. You see, it's not easy. Corey Mass over there. And go on. That's fun. I like this. We should do this every time. And Tim Nash over there. Do you know what else I could do to really mess things up? I can do this, but I never do. Now let's see what happens here, right? Let's just play with this for a couple of seconds. So first of all, we're going to say goodbye to Remke Stavris. Off you go. Point quickly now, everybody. Go on. I've got him. He's right there. No. Yeah. Okay. And to Tim Nash. And to Corey Mass. Look at me hedging my bets, and to me, just me as well. And let's put everybody right there. See if who gets to win. It's Corey who's winning in this particular event. There we go. Right,
I was first to show up, so
I was not ready for this mayhem.
No, exactly. Oh, this platform's great. You could do it this way instead. How about that? Or maybe a bit of this. Fancy that?
No. I look good in a bubble.
Okay. Let's go with the bubbles. Let's end it like that. In which case, I'm going to ask all of the people to wave in a circle this time. That'll be different. Let's see if we can do it. Thank you to you guys. If you're watching and leaving comments, I really appreciate it. We will be back, hopefully, next week, all things being equal.
It was a futon great stream.
So. Oh, you're never going to give that up, are you? I've given that away for free to the world. Right, see you guys later. And if you three guys just want to hang out for a minute, we'll have a chat. Thanks for watching. See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.